Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
And thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I am your host, Dominic Salvia. Mike Crute out on vacation. I am joined in studio by friend of the Devil, James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Morning Cannolis, right here on the Civic Media Network on Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m. And most importantly, a friend of the Devil's Advocates. Jim, thanks for sticking around, man.
Pleasure to be with you once again for hour two this afternoon.
Fox News brought up in the last hour. I want to get to that. And, of course, we'll get to your calls as well, 844-967-2789. Jennifer Rubin has a piece in the Washington Post. I want to kind of throw this out there for a little background and then good get stuff. Your opinions, counselor. So bear with the reading aloud need for a moment, if you would, please. As Rubin writes, the $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit filed by Dominion Voting Systems against Faux News over allegations that the company's voting machines were central to the 2020 stolen election conspiracy carries with it the potential for a crippling injury to the right-wing propaganda machine and a blow to its pretense to be a legitimate news organization. But in some respects, the case could also be a legal watershed with immense consequences for news coverage and the First Amendment protection, although not in the way Fox lawyers would have one believe. Summary judgment. This is when I will get your opinion, Jim.
Yep.
Before trial, the parties in a civil suit can bring a partial or complete motion for summary judgment, asking the court to rule that, as a matter of law, there is nothing for the jury to decide. The facts can be so one-sided that there is, in essence, no dispute. In nearly all cases, the motion is typically brought by the defendant, asserting that the plaintiff has not presented sufficient facts to establish liability. In a defamation case, the defendant seeking summary judgment could point out that the supposedly defamatory allegations have the virtue of being true, negating the plaintiff's case. But in the case involving Fox News, it is the plaintiff, Jim, Dominion, bringing the motion, a rare instance in which a litigant argues that there is simply no defense for the alleged defamer's conduct. The reason this seldom happens is that in most defamation cases, both sides can present evidence addressing such matters as whether the defendant intended to smear the plaintiff, whether the statements at issue were facts or opinions, and whether the statements were true. Here, however, Dominion's case appears to be so overwhelming that there is a good chance the judge will rule for the plaintiff before the case ever goes to trial. In particular, Fox News has not disputed that the accusations it made against Dominion were false. Because Fox has zero evidence to dispute the falsity of this claim, Fox cannot raise any issue of material fact, Dominion's lawyer argued in their motion. Fox already admitted that it is not planning to assert the truth or falsity of the assertion that Dominion rigged the election at trial, nor does it have the evidence to prove its truth. So this is what Dominion says. Now back to Jennifer Rubin. If Dominion wins its motion on this point, the judge would tell the jury that allegations aired by Fox News about rigged voting machines were false. The judge would tell the jury that.
Absolutely.
They're right. False. The only issues would be whether Fox News acted maliciously, but even that might not go to the jury, as Rubin writes. Quoting from Fox News' employees' depositions, Dominion's lawyers begin their brief as such, quote, Fox knew, period. From the top down, Fox knew the Dominion stuff, quote unquote, was total BS, quote unquote. Yet despite knowing the truth, or at a minimum, recklessly disregarding that truth, Fox spread and endorsed outlandish voter fraud claims about Dominion, even as it internally recognized the lies as, quote, crazy, absurd, and shockingly reckless. As Rubin writes, I have never seen the issue of malice resolved for the plaintiff as a matter of law. But Dominion has mounds of evidence from depositions and documents implicating hosts, their producers, and others, all the way up the chain of command to Fox Chairman Rupert Murdoch. As Dominion's lawyers put it, quote, "This case differs from nearly any defamation case before it. Normally, plaintiffs prove defendants' actual malice, whether they knew it was false or, in fact, entertained serious doubts as to the truth of the statement, by inference, as it would be rare for a defendant to admit such doubts. However, overwhelming direct evidence establishes Fox's knowledge of falsity, not just doubts. In ordinary litigation, you virtually never have proof of news organization employees admitting to each other that they were spreading lies.
Right.
Except in this case, if the judge goes for Dominion on the question of malice, that would put Fox News appropriately in a different category from virtually all other outlets. Jim, summary judgment.
Summary judgment, absolutely. Jennifer, right, she's got it just right. She's got it just right. And again, when I did civil litigation, still do civil litigation in the federal rules, this is exactly, she's got it, she's identified precisely what this is all about. You're basically saying, as she has well articulated it, that the facts are known. All the facts are known. How do we know that? Well, we've got people under oath. They've told us, indeed, they knew that this was false, and they went ahead anyway. We've got these emails back and forth. We've got these texts. The facts are clear. And what do they show? They show two things. One is we knew that what we were saying was wrong. And also, the other thing that makes this case so over the top, as we said before, is, again, you don't need this as a part of one of these cases, but you've also got the motive for it. Sometimes, you know, you say, okay, you did something because you just don't like somebody. You don't like the result of the election. You don't like Dominion machines for whatever reason. Here, you even have these folks give you an explanation that would otherwise go to the jury about why it is they engaged in this malicious conduct. And that motive was, again, ratings, and ratings equal money. And so, again, getting back to New York Times versus Sullivan, she is absolutely right. The number of times when you can be successful in going after your local newspaper, the New York Times, frankly, others out there, and allege successfully that they misstated something about me, about you, and they did it with malice, with purpose, with knowing intent. That's pretty few and far between. Do media sometimes make mistakes? You bet they
absolutely
do. Right?
Everybody
happens
does,
all
right?
the time.
Yeah.
They will often issue retractions. They'll explain, you know, okay, we got this wrong.
If you're credible and honest, you absolutely do. You put it on the front page and you say you were wrong. Yeah.
Right. We have seen recently some TV reporters who've been suspended for a while because of doing just that. And that's the responsible thing to do here. The big takeaway from what Jennifer Rubin is saying is, yes, indeed, this may not go to trial in the end, which is going to be a stunning because of what precisely she has said, which is the facts are known. There's nothing to decide here. The facts are known. The law is clear. Once again, New York Times versus Sullivan. Has the plaintiff, Dominion, shown true malice? Yes, absolutely. And it's not just one or two small statements. It's replete throughout their discussions of what they were doing, the back and forth, the concern, right? Again, this all came out of the early call of the Arizona election, and they were the first network to go out there and suddenly realize, wait a minute, we're bleeding. We got to stop this. In the days that followed, all but retracted that and then was among the last of the major media outlets, if you will, to call the election. All
real media operations are down for the scoop. They want
absolutely the
scoop. They want to be first to report it.
Right. And the irony, of course, is that Fox News was right in calling Arizona. They went out there maybe a little bit ahead of their skis, but they were right about this. And now that's the very motive that explains and supports this notion of malice. I think that Jennifer Rubin's got it just right. You file the motion. You say, on the first portion of it, here are the facts. They're not denying these texts are real. They're not denying things that send depositions under oath. What is the law? You got to be able to show that there's malice. You bet. That's it. Judge, there's frankly nothing to decide but for one issue, which I'll get to. Nothing to decide here. Find and enter judgment in favor of Dominion. And then the only question you've got, maybe for the court, probably for the jury, is how much money? They're asking for $1.6 billion. How do you quantify that? That could still be a jury question. That's the kind of thing that lawyers will also argue about in a court of law to a jury. Juries do that all the time, right? But basically saying, you know what? The whole reason we have juries, they're not lawmakers. They're fact finders. Every single jury, criminal or civil, they find facts. The facts here are known. The law is clear. What more is there to say? And that's what Jennifer Rubin is instructing us all about today.
So if this were to come to pass, there would still be a jury. There'd still be a trial. Sure. Right. The judge would just present these items as facts.
Right.
And, okay, judge and jury, how much money? That's the only thing they're going to
– right.
What about the appeal process? Because I can already see it. Oh, you know, we liberal judge, you know, these kinds of things. What would Fox be able to do after this, assuming they say they give them – you know, the $1.6 billion. And what about punitive? Could they double it?
Absolutely.
Could they do more than that?
Right, requests can be made. Again, even the $1.6 billion, all of that is subject to presentation in front of a jury, right? You've got to bring out your charts and explain
the
damage.
So the judge would never, in this case, the judge would not make that determination?
Probably not. Because if you think about it, unlike this other very interesting but fairly compelling situation, money damages are the kinds of things that, again, courts can, in fact, make that determination. But probably Fox would want a jury to decide this. And so, again, juries can look at things. They do it all the time. Medical malpractice cases, right, come to mind, among many other commercial cases. So what could happen here? Sure, they're going to appeal this and say, you know what? Summary judgment on the foundational issue of liability was wrongly entered. Okay, and then everything flowed from that, of course, the damages, which would also be part of the lower court proceeding, take that up on appeal. So it could be kind of a dual appeal. The question then on appeal is, again, courts of appeals have great, they defer a huge amount. And there are standards, even for summary judgment, that say, okay, did the judge abuse her or his discretion in doing this? Is there a factual basis for doing this? And once again, most three-judge panels on the Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia in the Seventh Circuit will look at this and say, wow, this is overwhelming and highly unlikely that under these facts, again, Jennifer Rubin's got them, everybody else reporting on these things rationally, looking at this and saying, we've almost never seen a case like this before. This is huge. And courts of appeals may not have the inflection of my voice in issuing their very dry opinion, but they will probably affirm that. And maybe they'll, when it comes to damages, they can always adjust some things because that's maybe a little bit more of a judgment kind of a thing. But again, and Dominion, I'm sorry, but the Fox News would certainly appeal this, but Dominion has a very strong chance, not only at trial level, but on appeal too. This is a very, very compelling case.
And you won't hear about it on Fox News.
You will not.
You're listening to The Devil's Advocates. You'll hear about it here, and we'll take your calls. I know we kind of rambled on there. Right. Well, we didn't ramble. We appreciate it. But we want to get to the callers, get your opinions at 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Gotten away with it too if it wasn't for those meddling devil's advocates.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, sticking around with me until 6 o'clock. We're gonna get to your calls at 844-967-2789. I want to share with the audience here during the break, Jim, worst case scenario, if the judge makes this call and it goes up to appeal, they could just kick it back and say, okay, you got to have a jury trial, you can't do the summary judgment. What would be the basis for that, in your opinion?
Sure. So again, appeals courts, as I said, would give the judge a lot of discretion. Kind of review this again. Compelling case. I think the appeals court would affirm and say, that's right, he got it right. But let's suppose that Dominion is successful. The Fox News is successful in convincing a three-judge panel this should go back down. We were robbed of our right to trial, right?
We want
a jury to decide this. Okay, you might get an appellate panel to do that. Worst case scenario, again, it takes time. It'll be another year after this, but it sends it back down. Try this case, judge, and you schedule it on for trial. Okay, we'll impanel the jury. We will instruct them on the law of New York Times versus Sullivan. And then, as you and I were talking during the break, the fun part of this, the horrific part of this, frankly, and for American future and a democracy is, then you get all these people in the stand. And then you and Mike and others can report on a daily basis what Laura Ingraham is saying and what Tucker Carlson.
Is there a chance that these hosts, these folks that were part of this lie, right, and part of this liability and the slander, whatever you want to call it, that they would be forced to testify.
Sure. If I were a Dominion, frankly, not only for the impact on a jury, but also to establish my case. Am I going to call these people, the three or four, five, six? I'm going to call Rupert Murdoch. He has said things under oath. He's made these public statements that sort of condemns his own network. Am I going to call him? You bet I am.
Yeah.
And again, they're hostile witnesses. They're not your witnesses. You can probably lead them in ways you otherwise wouldn't be able to do on direct examination. But even on open-ended questions, did you say this, Mr. Carlson? Did you say this, Ms. Ingram? And blow those things up and put them on a
big poster board.
Poster board, right? The old style that you and I are, right? And let the jury see that and have that trial, which might take a couple weeks or so. And again, does Fox want that?
Right.
This is incredibly bad publicity already. And again, under the radar, if you will, because the New York Times is reporting on it and everybody reads that. Now we've got this day after day after day in the public's eye. And how interesting would that be to see Tucker Carlson on the stand for 4 and 5 hours, 5, 6 hours, who knows how long. That would be news in and of itself. And Dominion might get something out of that, too. Again, I think they would be wise to pursue this summary judgment notion. But you also get something because if the same jury also decides on damages, you do that presumably, maybe not right away, but down the road. They have now suffered through all these people, and they're looking at them and saying, you're a bunch of liars, and your emotions then do somewhat overtake you. If it's a close call between $1.2 billion and $1.6 billion, maybe you go for the higher number because you've just heard about this horrific, malicious behavior by these human beings who purport to be journalists, and they are not.
And F those guys.
Right.
844-967-2789. Let's get to some of our very patient callers. Margaret, you are up. Welcome. What do you got for us?
Hi. Jim, I would like to ask you, since...
Yes, Margaret, go ahead.
Since Gableman was fired, I'm switching topics.
Sure,
that's fine.
Since Gableman was fired, why should the taxpayers of Wisconsin be on the hook for his defending himself? I don't understand.
Right. I join you in what I'm going to call a rhetorical question, Margaret, but your point is well taken. You know, so much of that was animated not by the interest in the republic, right? The future, as we're talking this afternoon, government. Taxpayer dollars do, in fact, every single day support legitimate litigation, criminal and civil litigation, where what your interests, Margaret, here in the state of Wisconsin, are advanced apolitically without a partisan bent to them. That wasn't this. Right?
And,
and not even close, even as he's taking on the judge. He himself was a witness, as we're talking about witnesses here, and shows contempt for the judge in even asking him about expenses and what he did and why he's not complying with subpoenas. Under those circumstances, why, I simply repeat your question, Margaret. You know, why should they? And this is once again a question that should be posed to our legislature, right?
Well, it's Robin Voss, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, Gableman's out, but right? these lawsuits still exist.
They continue, right?
And Voss continues to appeal because
right.
he's mad about paying $300-some
right.
an hour to the firm that they lost their open records request to.
Right.
I mean, in the meantime, he's paying his attorneys. Voss is paying $400-some
throwing more money and more money and more money
so
at
things,
all of this.
They
right?
exist even without Gableman
right
now.
Absolutely. They've got a life of their own, unfortunately, but yeah. What probably could have been stopped, gosh, very early on was not. And so now this does take on a life of its own. And Margaret, to your good point, much of this, if not all of this, impacts you. And again, as we're talking about budget right now, about education and healthcare, all these other things, commerce in your tax bill. And in the meantime, your very tax dollar is going to support something that we knew from the start, as Dom and I have chatted about all afternoon, frivolous, fake, unreal, big lie, call it what you will. And our government did that. At least part of our government did that in the state of Wisconsin. Why should you basically supporting that, compensating for that? And again, I'll say it. This is why, Margaret, you and others have got to get that stamp out and put it on a piece of correspondence here, send it off. And more than that, call into shows like this and shout from the rooftops about the outrage that which is this expenditure of money.
Right now, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and his actions with this Michael Gableman, former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice, we are on the hook for about $2.5 million. $2.5 million for a joke, for fraud,
absolutely,
for window dressing, right, for no reason whatsoever. And the only way, you want to get rid of that? I mean, yes, I'm down. Got to vote Robin Voss out.
Absolutely.
What we need to do initially is get Janet Protasiewicz on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, right, give us a chance to get some fair maps, and then we got a fighting chance. And I guarantee you, when people hear about these kinds of things from these quote-unquote fiscal conservatives, most people are not going to agree with it. Thank you for the call, Mark. We'll get back to your calls, 844-967-2789. James Santel, my guest.
I don't know if you know the Devil's Advocates, but the show is kind of a big deal.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines are open, 844-967-2789. James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Morning Cannolis here on Civic Media Network, Saturdays 9 to 11. Stick it around till 6, Jim. Thank you so much for doing
so. Glad to be with you.
On the topic of the big lie, we've now shifted and gone to this whole Fox thing. But I want to just throw this one out there, too, is this is one of the headlines of the day. Jenna Ellis, a Colorado attorney who was former President Trump's legal advisor as he tried to overturn the 2020 election loss, has been censured by a Colorado judge for misconduct. So it wasn't an organization. It was literally a judge. And here are some of the 10 misrepresentations. A misrepresentation,
right,
Jim.
They're lies. They're
6'10",
lies. Right,
300
right.
pounds.
Right.
Let's say misrepresentation.
Right.
Here's a couple of the things Ellis was cited for. We have affidavits from witnesses. We have voter intimidation. We have the ballots that were manipulated. We have all kinds of statistics that show this was a coordinated effort in all of these states to transfer votes either from Trump to Biden, to manipulate the ballots, to count them in secret. Ellis falsely said on the Bartiromo show on Fox Business.
It is shocking, if not surprising, right? Right. That's that old phrase. And once again, this judge, as a part of the Colorado mechanism, finds that she has violated the attorney code, if you will. And we've got the same thing in the state of Wisconsin. There, they've got something called the Office of I think it's lawyer of attorney regulation. Here, it's the OLR. It's the Office of Lawyer Regulation. You investigate. You have people who look at what you have done and said, and you make recommendations to, in that case, a judge or a board. And it appears that she entered into a stipulation. Probably this is the same version of kind of a criminal plea agreement, right? I'm going to minimize my exposure.
Yep.
Rather than going ahead and having some proceeding, maybe before the Colorado Supreme Court, let's bring an end to this. She's got a little bit of a fine to pay, and she's got this imposition of penalty, finding that she, again, made misrepresentations. And again, the point behind this is that lawyers take an oath. I took an oath many years ago. I have to re-up that oath all the time, and I pay my dues and have to certify that I'm being educated every couple of years and let the Supreme Court in the state of Wisconsin know about that. That's true of every other lawyer here. And whether I am here on this show or especially, and her problem was she was also acting in a representative capacity, right?
Yeah.
She's representing Trump. Makes it especially problematic. You are out there in the public domain advocating for your client, and you are saying these kinds of things that are completely wrong. We know they're in the same category that Rudy Giuliani did, that others did, Sidney Powell, and all of them are falling now, right? New York, Washington, all of them are looking at these folks and saying, we are either sanctioning you, We are suspending you, or in Rudy's case, and others as well. We are taking away your license to practice law. We're going to stop you from doing this. Boy, there's deterrence for you,
right?
Just for individually for the Jenna Ellises of the world, but also once again for other attorneys who might think down the road that that zealous advocacy has no limits. It does, and the Ellis situation today underscores that. You can't be out there simply saying things that you know are not true, even if your client wants you to do so.
Right.
You are in violation of your ethical code.
But they're paying me a lot of money,
a lot
Jim.
Of money, right? Getting, right?
Does that matter? Come
and
on.
I need to put the pool in this summer, right? And I've got to fund that. That will get you in big trouble, and it will compromise your license. And Ellis has learned that the hard way. These others also learning it the hard way. Maybe it doesn't impact them a whole lot, given their complete lack of reputation generally throughout the nation. But for her and for others, it does note that she's continuing to practice law, which you can do. Presumably, the Colorado folks have said, we're not going to take your license away. But gosh, when you are promoting yourself as a lawyer who will represent people genuinely and honestly, you pull up this information about your lawyer, probably it inhibits the number of clients who are going to be batting down your door to have you represent them.
A couple other things that she said, referring to contested states, Nevada, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Georgia, she falsely said on Spicer's show, with all these states combined, we know that the election was stolen from President Trump, and we can prove that.
Gosh.
One of the false statements cited in the complaint made by Ellis on her Twitter, referring to her appearance on a show hosted by a Colorado radio personality. She said, I spent an hour with this guy for an in-depth discussion about President Trump's fight for election integrity, the overwhelming evidence proving this was stolen, and why fact-finding and truth, not politics, matters. You know, it's like projection, it's gaslighting, it's ironic.
Everything.
I mean, the things that they say and do, I mean, it really applies to them. I just... Does it matter in the overall arch of it? I mean, we now have, you know, the media organization as Fox News is just blowing up because of the obvious lies, proven lies. We have attorneys for these folks left and right getting disbarred, getting censured,
yep.
You know, et cetera, et cetera. So does it sway the public opinion in your opinion, Jim?
It certainly should. And yes, I think it does. As we talked about in connection with Fox News, this is a story that's not going to die anytime soon. The
no,
Fox
if I
News
can help
piece,
it.
Right? Right. You're on every afternoon, right? And every so often I'll stop by to add my two cents to your good discussion. This kind of thing, too. Yeah, I know there are an awful lot of people say, oh, that's just lawyers getting in trouble. That's
right.
Lawyers, that's attorneys, and there's an awful lot of lawyer regulation.
Right. All the lawyer jokes come
exactly,
out.
Exactly. Here we go once again. And I appreciate some of those as well. But it does, you know, you think about even post-Watergate. It took a huge number of lawyers down at that time. And what happened? The Congress responded, and bar associations around the country also said, that's the reason why. Watergate is the reason why I have to get continuing legal education credit every single couple of years, including ethics credits, believe it or not.
Ethics?
I'm sure Colorado, I'm sure, is the same thing. That these messages about lawyers saying these things that people have heard and thought, well, gee, it's a lawyer saying it. And then if they follow the news, as they should be today on this wonderful program, oh, that lawyer got in big trouble. She was not just slapped on the wrist. She was sanctioned here. Other lawyers are having their tickets pulled. I guess I shouldn't believe them just because they're lawyers. And especially if they're saying just these broad things, huge amount of evidence. Rudy Giuliani very famously said, yeah, we've got a lot of theories, but we've got no evidence for that, right? Oh, my goodness, right? That's a violation of your oath of office, and that's deceiving the public. The public should be outraged by that and should respond badly to this story and others just like it.
Do you think the conspiracy was broad enough and hidden enough and well, 'cause I feel the rage, man, you know,
but I
don't see that the general population is. And as mentioned, Fox News, you're not going to hear this kind of stuff on Fox News. They're the subject of it. But I'm not clear that it's seeping into the general population.
Right, right. I think that's one of the concerns. And that's why, again, I work for the government all my life, and so I don't have a lot of money to do this. But I think there are people out there who, again, would be able to buy that airtime. Wouldn't that be interesting? To buy 15 minutes, I don't know, on ABC.
Fox News turned down a progressive group trying to advertise on their
absolutely,
stations.
Right? And so get that out there somehow. You know, in the wake of, again, the Mueller report, John Lithgow was out in California selling tickets for readings of this. People were packing the theaters to listen to this stuff. Somehow find the mechanism to get this into the public media and the public attention in the same way that Dancing with the Stars and the wives of whatever we're looking at these days,
Right. Whatever and, reality. Because this is exactly. One hell of a reality TV show.
It is.
Man. It seriously is.
Right. And you can do something without being comical. I mean, just take this Fox News story here recently. You can have a very benign picture of Laura Ingraham and these other folks and simply have an actor without any invective reading what she has said. How incredibly powerful that would be. Or even doing the back and forth that night of the Arizona call. Do that. Make that a little bit small t theatrical and sort of codify in the public mind what it was these people were saying at the very time that they were telling you just the opposite. I think that's a great idea.
I'm
looking for that person. It may not be you or me to fund that, but let's do that somehow, right?
I think we need to get the South Park guys.
There you go, right?
844-967-2789. We've got some patient callers. Let's get to him. Dick from Madison, Wisconsin. You're up. Welcome, Dick. What do you got for us? Hello, Dick. I got some issues going on with the phones here. Dick, I'm going to put you on hold.
Man.
Oh, hang on. All right, go ahead, Dick.
Love your show on Saturdays, James.
No, thanks, fantastic. Dick. Appreciate that. You're one of the nine listeners throughout the state of Wisconsin. Appreciate very much.
Question. In looking at the last year and a half, with everything going on with the January 6th and Trump and all the rest, knowing what we know about how Merrick Garland has been, do you think we would have been better served if he would have passed the ball to Jack Smith, who I look at like the pit bull, and then the Pekingese, Merrick Garland, to take care of stuff? Now, I'm not saying that these issues aren't big, but like the airlines and the trains and all the rest, it just seems like he had no interest in really going for the jugular with Trump, where this gentleman seems to, and time is of the essence, in my opinion.
Yeah, we're
running out of time with this, and pretty soon people will look at it and go, well, you know, that was two and a half years ago.
That's the other concern about this, right? And I agree with you. You know, operationally, the way this works, of course, is Jack Smith is there. He is plainly the perfect guy to do this. Call him a pit bull. Call him whatever you want. Experienced, thoughtful, bright. As we've said, when I've talked about this to Dom and Mike previously, I've just brought him in early on. You don't have to make him a special counsel. Just do him. Put him on the payroll, which he basically is. Merrick Garland still has to endorse any indictment here. That's the way the special counsel works. So this notion to somehow that he has done this arm's length separation from the Department of Justice, not really true. Doesn't matter a whole lot. But the bottom line is to pick up on your second point, Dick. Absolutely. TikTok, we are losing time. We're losing time here. And I'll do a little bit of math here, as I've done before. You know, it's entirely possible that 23 months from now, we could have a different president in the White House, which means we'll have a different attorney general in the Department of Justice at 9th and Constitution. We don't know if, again, it could very well be Joe Biden. In which case, we've got 4 more years to do this. Highly likely, if the White House changes, you get a different attorney general. Whoever that is could very well say, you know what, I'm gonna pardon all these folks. I'm gonna dismiss these indictments in the same way that Gerald Ford, back in 1974, said, you know, and for the good of the country, I'm gonna pardon this former president, and we're gonna move on. The great national nightmare is over. You can imagine a scenario like that happening.
Would you consider the good of the country?
I would not.
Pure BS.
I would not. That is completely unfounded.
Do you think the Gerald Ford pardon was good for the country?
I look back at it now and I think no. Yeah. I think no. I can't imagine the kinds of things. I have no doubt Gerald Ford had a great burden in dealing with that on a daily basis, and that was part of it. It would have been good for us as a nation. Who knows what deterrent value that would have had back then
to
indict, a former president. We'd be doing it maybe now for a second time. There'd be precedent,
or maybe
right?
Because there was consequence, we wouldn't have it a second time.
And again, what we're seeing now.
And maybe this time we should, so we don't have it. A third time
when your grandchildren once again are dealing with all of this. So the answer, Jack Smith has got to make that recommendation. Dick, you're exactly right. TikTok, frankly, I'll say this again, on March 9th here, almost the 10th here, and getting into mid-March, it may already be too late. that even if you indict tomorrow, by the time you arraign a former president and all these other folks, pretrial motions, those will take a year. Scheduling a trial, that's another 2 years. Discovery, let's assume that there is a trial of some kind, a conviction, a sentencing, an appellate proceeding, that we're talking 4 to 5 years down the road. And at any time along that course of conduct, there could be a decision by an attorney general to dismiss the prosecution. There could be an attorney general, a decision by a president to pardon. And that's the great concern that's out there. I hate to sound dour about this, but it may already be too late. And that's the concern. I would be delighted. I will join Dom and others in celebrating that decision when Merrick Garland announces it, or maybe when Fannie Willis from Georgia announces it. That may come soon. That could be the other saving grace here. We've got somebody in Manhattan also looking at Alvin Bragg. All those state folks could also act, but Dick, to your most important point, act now. Don't do it after you've you have spent a lot of time and you can identify sufficiently discrete prosecution units. You can't charge Donald Trump with every rotten thing that he did for the previous 4 years he was in office. But choose those that are most significant. We know what those are. They happened on January 6th, before and after that. Choose those and prosecute. Do it now.
Well, I would say this, James Santel, former U.S. attorney. As we go to break here, we'll take some more of your calls at 844-967-2789 for the last segment of the day. Beware the Ides of March. I got a good feeling, man.
March 15th, right, coming up.
Coming up. Folks, we are coming to a break. We're going to take some more of your calls. Once again, 844-96-PARTY. Last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now.
The Devil's Advocates, the fix for political junkies everywhere.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the last segment of the day. So if you got something to say, hit us up right now on the phones, 844-967-2789. James Santel, thanks for being here, man. It's been a lot of fun.
It has been great fun.
Never,
do it again soon.
Never enough
right?
time,
right?
Man.
Never
no,
enough time.
No doubt. I got some thoughts, but our callers have been patient. Let's hear their thoughts. We'll start with Jim from Appleton, Wisconsin. Welcome, Jim. What do you got?
Hey, guys. Don, you're doing fantastic. What do you need Crudy for?
Oh, thanks,
Jim,
man.
You're the reason I get up in the morning on Saturday. Love your show.
And
1974.
Thank you so much, Jim. And very good. Continue to tell people to get up with you, do laundry while you're listening to me, right?
I carry you around until your show is done. But 1974,
having
lived through it, Gerald Ford did the right thing at the time.
Okay.
Nixon needed to be pardoned so we could move past it. What was wrong was letting Reagan get away with Iran-Contra. Mm-hmm. And that kind of started the snowball, and we wound up with Trump and his wonderful collusion in the 2016 campaign.
Right. You know, lots of things, Jim. You know, you look back at the Reagan era, 1980 to 1988, and obviously a little extended with George Bush there too. It really was a watershed time in our nation's history. It wasn't just economically, certainly in terms of the tax base. A lot of things we're debating now. It was a different time, and you know, great reverence for Jimmy Carter. Right before that, I know many people look at him and say he was an unsuccessful president, decent guy in the White House, and maybe the time wasn't right for him to continue for a second term. But Reagan changed this nation, and you identified Iran-Contra. Yeah, a few people got in trouble for that. Probably in the end, the decision was made not to prosecute, in part because we know now that Ronald Reagan at the end of his term was probably beginning to enter some cognitive challenges. And so we decided not to go after him. But as we said before, and you're indicating here, Jim, you know, you establish a precedent once again, and it's one that we can look back on it. And we steal then the argument, we've never done this before. Well, yeah, we did, if we had done it back then. And again, I have to say, even as to Gerald Ford, probably right at the time, as I look back at it today, I would have very much been interested in seeing Richard Nixon being held responsible for what he did.
We've never done this before, which means, oh, look, we're not going to do anything about it again.
Now, you know what I'm saying? Exactly.
Thanks for the call, Jim. Great points.
Call. Yep.
I remember Reagan, man. I mean, I was born in 71, man. I was 9-10 years old. And Reagan freed the hostages, right? Of course, that wasn't true. He was negotiating before he was president. I mean, this whole thing was a ploy by him. But I grew out of that. I realized I grew up and I read some things like, oh, man, what are you doing?
Right.
So, you know, as a child, I looked up because here's this solid old
he's
man.
He's the president of the United States of America.
He's got that slick back hair. And he's saving us from the
he's
evil Iranians.
He's got that mellow voice, disaster, right? He talks to America, right.
But, of course, that's not the reality. The reality is you can look at the history, you can see what they did, and, again, very little consequence to the man at the time. 844-967-2789. Joe from Madison, you're up. Welcome, Joe. What do you got for us?
Great show. Absolutely wonderful. I would urge any listeners to understand that Saturday show that Jim puts together, repeats on Sunday, is chock full of the same kind of information you've just been getting over the last 2 hours. It is fantastic. Definitely tune in and catch the podcast if for some reason you can't catch it on Saturday or Sunday. I would urge you to push forward with your idea of some kind of presentation where people just read some of the texts and emails that the Fox crew came up with in terms of this Dominion lawsuit. It's a fire hose of just lies and humorous because it's so ironic and weird. And it would be a great presentation to have. Absolutely great. I think it's a brilliant idea. And if you have just a few seconds here, because there may be other callers, can you take 1 minute and just help us understand what is meant by malice? When the law says malice, what exactly do they mean, particularly in this case having to do with Dominion? Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Sure. Joe, thanks so much for the call, the kind words, and I look forward to talking with you down the road as well. So appreciate that very much about the Saturday morning show. You know, sometimes the law repeats in the law common sense words. And, you know, when you think about malice, things like, great anger, if you will. I hate to say hatred, but, you know, malice is an incarnation of almost evil, if you will, right? I am doing something because I want that other person to be hurt, right? It's that kind of a full-throated intent. And again, that's not a Black's Law Dictionary version of it, but pretty much that's what the Supreme Court said in New York Times versus Sullivan. I've got to sit down and say, you know what? I'm going to go after Dom, and I'm going to do these things to get him because I don't like him. I'm going to say these things that I know that are not true. I'm hoping that he is injured by them. I have the intent that he goes down. That's malice, and that's, again, a very, very colloquial version of the definition there, and that's what a jury would hear in this instance. And frankly, Joe, to your good point, that is what those texts reveal. That is, not only did we say these things that are purposefully wrong, but we did it out of malice, and we did it out of an interest in getting ratings. We get an interest in getting our viewers to believe us. That's a malice in and of itself.
Do they do it out of interest and hoping to overturn the election, to overturn the will of the people? Right. Is that part of it?
It could be. I suppose they would not have minded if that's the collateral impact. But I think that, you know, the Rupert Murdoch stuff certainly indicates that, again, they knew about this. And the real impetus for all this, and the reason why all the flurry of calls and texts back and forth, they made the call in Arizona, and all of a sudden they realized, wait, that's contrary to our brand, and people are falling off, and we got to stop the bleeding now, right? And so we're going to tell them all these things, and we're going to all but take back our call of Arizona, and we're going to spend the next 2 years talking about how, well, yes, the numbers are not what you think. And that is the kind of malice that would, in fact, support a jury verdict, a court summary judgment order that shows that they did this with the intent, the purpose, frankly, to do what? To hurt, again, getting back to the case itself, to hurt Dominion. We're saying these things about Dominion. Their machines caused this, members of the, right? Yeah.
But Dominion was just the poor sucker in the room.
Absolutely,
I mean,
it
could have been anybody else.
Absolutely.
They filled the theory. Right. They filled the storyline. It could have been other things, other people, but the sentiment is still the same.
Right.
We're going to use this lie.
That is a mechanism.
Of these people to, and we're doing it for a cause.
Right, exactly. And then again, how does that malice manifest itself? It manifests itself in the belief that there are people out there to this day, lots of them, unfortunately, who believe something about American history that is not true.
Could a judge make Fox News or a judgment make Fox News and their host go on and retract and apologize?
All sorts of things, injunctive relief, compelling a party to do something to remedy what she, he, or it did. All kinds of things could happen. A creative judge could do just that. They're out there sometimes doing these unusual things. Again, declarative judgment and compelling people to own up to what they've done.
James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Morning Cannolis Saturdays here on the Civic Media Network. He's on from 9 to 11. Jim, thanks for coming around, miss.
Always
so much fun.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Let's do this again real soon, all
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Thank you for listening, folks. We are the Devil's Advocates. Tomorrow, friend of the devil, Maggie Dawn, here in studio with me as well. Make sure you tune in. We'll see you then.